So we're back, episode 31 of Dialed In with Jake and Zach, and Lost Chevrolet Buick. What can you say? They made the haul out to Vegas, the racing portion of the Lost Chevrolet Buick team. Not a good showing for the actual the Law cars, but you know, the salesman Dylan pulled them through, won a lot of rounds. But they're back to work. They made the trip back, made it to work on Monday. Steve kept Josh and Dylan under control long enough to not kill either one of them on the way home. So that alone, you should go buy a vehicle from Steve, because you almost feel sorry for him for being in the truck that long with Josh Ludke and Dylan Winters. But go to Lost Chevrolet Buick, Boonville, Indiana. They are a family-owned sales and service center in the tri-state area. Give them a call. Look them up on Facebook. Lost Chevrolet Buick. It's where it's at. We'll be back after a short introduction here on Dialed In with Jake and Zach.
Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2, 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon, 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
Okay, we're back. The next episode of Dialed In, episode 31 at this point, my goodness. But this podcast, I've titled it Holy Vegas, where it's going to be all things Spring Fling Vegas for sure. Awesome event. Can't wait to get to talking about it. We have a great guest on tap for you guys later, so tune in. But yeah, so Jake, how close are you now to having a running race car?
Well, another week's gone by. It's like that old SpongeBob meme, like 3 days later. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like I'm getting closer. My buddy Brad Miles does all my wiring, does all everything that a person that pays attention to what they're doing should do, because that's not me. I can stick the engine in it and put fuel in the carburetor or injection, whatever I've got on it that week, and make it fire. But, you know, if the wire is not plugged in right or wired to the car right, I'm screwed. So he's working on that, getting the new race pack put in it, getting some other stuff that I've got thrown to the side. I've got parts in from Race Tech. I ordered a transmission cooler from them, and Rod, he said, hey man, he said, I love listening to that podcast. And I said, really? I'm cool. You know what? Let's bring Race Tech race cars on board. But no, just giving him a hard time. But he said, yeah, he said, I got a cooler and everything right here. I'll ship it out tomorrow. I think I did that when I landed in Houston. And so I got parts showed up, and I know Race Tech's busy. And I said, hey man, I need the two adapters that go in the cooler. I said, I didn't see them anywhere in the box. He said, we were busy. I must have forgot them. And he like overnighted cooler fittings to me. So a big shout out to Rod Corder at Race Tech and Russ and Kellen Farmer and everything they do for the racing community, let alone, you know, sales and service wise. But I got the cooler in. I've got my Stainless Works header kit in. I have to take it over to Aaron Whitenack and get it all welded up. Other than that, you know, I'm waiting on the heartbeat. You know, I've got the transmission of Matt Dattis. Attention in the pits, Matt Dattis. You still have my torque converter. So whenever Matt's going to bring it back to me here when he comes and visits Carly in Bloomington. He's been out busy on the road racing. And as soon as I get a torque converter, we'll be back.
Okay.
I'm going to turn off the beeping sound.
All right. If you all are still listening to this, thank you. And this is a testament to just how real we are. The Jake's oven alarm going off in the background. So it's all good. That's life, right?
So, hey, yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as I get my torque converter back from Matt Dattis, I know Aaron at Diamond Engine Machine, he's busy. I kind of told him I wasn't in a big hurry for this thing, because I'm really not. I've got plenty of stuff I've got going on right now. Would love to have my car running. However, it's not a big deal. I'm a pretty patient person, I like to think, you know, when it comes to things like that. So I know he's got people that he's taking care of and deals that just aren't. I mean, I guess you know more than I do that whenever you're putting an engine together, you know, you can't rush anything. And I understand that completely. Sure. But I think he's got the short block assembled. So it won't be long now. See how bad I've got the heads messed up since, you know, I've been doing all the work on them myself for a couple of years now. So. We're an engine away, a little bit of wiring, and some TIG welding on some stainless headers. I think we're good.
Good deal, man. Yeah, I'm just giving you a heck about it. I forget, you know, you definitely cannot rush perfection for sure. So I just will be glad the day, you know, that I see that the hook and hillbilly back on the track. Keep it the hell away from me.
So the guy that, you know, that wears me out every single time. It's ridiculous.
not entirely true. But anyways, my week was, our weekend was pretty much just filled with family and stuff, which was great. We went out to my dad's house. He's got a couple acres out there, you know, and we hid the Easter eggs three times for Justin and Lucas, 50 eggs that they wanted to go find. Didn't have anything in them. They just wanted to go Easter egg hunt. So just did Easter egg hunts and dyed eggs, did all that good stuff. But ready to get back racing this weekend. You know, we're headed out Friday night. Headed south to Montgomery for the Super Sevens. We're going to run the Saturday and Sunday 10, so looking forward to it. You know, everything really was nothing wrong with the car when I loaded it the last time, so I'm sure the Sebring Performance, Odown Motorsports, Chevy is going to be ready to go. I'm ready to, definitely ready to get back on the track. I've been playing the practice tree a lot. I'm anxious to get back in the car. Every other week is, for me, actually, is kind of rough. I'd rather race every weekend, but my goodness, if you want to race a weekend in our area, our side of the country, I guess at this point, this weekend is huge in the world of big money bracket racing. A ton of stuff going on. Besides the sevens, you got the Darlington race for the Footbreakers, 40K. And then I know, like, around here, Nashville's running for $5,000 for pro. US 40's running for $5,000. The tracks, the local tracks themselves putting on, you know, $5,000 races. Kind of interesting that they're doing it as close as those two tracks are, but I'm hoping that enough races spread out to get them both supported, given the support that they need. But I want to race 2 days, so that's the reason I'm headed down to Montgomery down there. And once again, I want to get as many laps on that track as possible.
Yeah, and you made a good point. All these people are grouping on top of each other. But, you know, one that really stands out this weekend is the ATI Footbreak 40Ks or Bigfoot 40Ks. You know, that event last year, it took off. And it comes back to Darlington, which is, as you know, an incredible facility.
Yes, it is.
I think you're going to see a heck of a car count for that. And that's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be probably, other than the WFC, you know, that's going to take the cake on Footbreak this year for all Footbreakers. I think that's going to be probably a 320 entry deal.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many entries they get. A lot of people heading that way. It's became, like you said, one of the premier, if not the premier Footbreak event going on for the year. So we will definitely be covering that event next for sure. So can't wait to see who shows out. So yeah, with that, I guess we'll go into our results section. Of course, we're going to talk all things K&N Spring Fling Million presented by Optima Batteries. We have the results here for you. Incredible event put on by Peter Biondo and Kyle Seipel. I mean, amazing, great to watch. The coverage was great. Thank Bang Shift for that. Gave us great entertainment all week. I was really glued to it most of the time whenever I wasn't working. So just awesome to watch and look like a lot of fun for the racer. So to start off Tuesday, they start off, they're going to do a race for the dragster. This was the American Race Cars Brando Custom Paint Dragster Shootout. They ended up having some weather issues Tuesday, just the only weather issues they ended up having. It was good. 12 cars remaining. They decided to go ahead and get set for Wednesday morning, and that saw the final round, Jeff Byrne taking the win over G-dubbed Gary Williams in the final and taking home that American Race Cars chassis custom paint job. So way to go, Jeff.
Team Slushy. Yeah. You ever had one of Jeff Burns' slushies?
No.
Oh, man. You haven't lived until you had a Burnsy slushie. And you can even get the Big Jed version, which is you got to catch that about 3 o'clock in the afternoon before they put the gas in it. And, yeah, if you ever see anybody walking around with a styrofoam cup and a really, really big straw, go to Burns' trailer because the slushies are flowing. And I'm sure they were flowing Tuesday night and Wednesday night at that for the success Burns has had in the flings. You know, he won a fling event. I want to say he won one of the fall fling days last year, if I'm not mistaken. But he's one of those guys that were in the Bank Shift commercial saying, "It's the most money I ever won in my life." That's Jeff Burns right there. And it's so good to see him and Lane Dickin. They travel just about every big money race, and they travel together, and they drive each other's cars and whatnot, which Jeff usually just singles his car, and Lane just hops in it while it's hot and takes it to the standing lanes and wins a whole bunch of money with it. But it's really good to see a guy like Jeff Burns show up and do well, because, you know, he's awesome. He is what makes the sport fun. He's what makes this not just a business. He makes it a hobby, and you know that, yeah, he's going to be upset he lost, but the party's about to start.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that rolls us into Wednesday. The Maytag Silver State Refrigeration Wednesday 30K, which is Shane Thompson and the crew there at Silver State Refrigeration. And Kevin Thorpe got the win over John LaBouche Jr. And I called LaBouche today, Zach, and I said, you know, hey, congrats on your hugely unsuccessful weekend. And I called him at, like, I don't know, 10 o'clock this morning. He's like, man, I was up till 4 o'clock making that stuff right just so I get one more win light. So, I mean, holy cow, how many rounds did LaBouche go this weekend?
It was insane. I mean, all of them. He basically went all of them. It was that Roadster made a ton of laps. He just turns into a robot at some point, I think. You know, unbelievable performance. And to not have a final round win out of that, I mean, for him, it's got to feel like he came up short. But when you look at it as a whole, I mean, he took the overall round win title, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah, by like 10 rounds. And yeah. they're 10-round, 11-round races with buybacks, but there wasn't buybacks up until Friday. So
I mean, what can you do? I mean, you get to the final or the semifinal every day. Dominant performance, for sure. Just reminding us who exactly how good Junior really is.
And he says he's up till 4 o'clock in the morning working on stuff. And I'm willing to bet he had to roll rings and bearings and lifters into that thing because it's probably tired. But Brad Burton was the Pro 38 winner there on Wednesday. And I think it was a stocker, wasn't there? Super stock car?
Yep.
He's normally a class racer. He showed up and, I mean, he did some damage. I think he was down to like the semis maybe. I think he won one round once he got mixed in. Definitely a good showing for him.
Yeah, the bottom bulb guys the whole time at Vegas were really good, you know, even past the Pro 38. I thought the Pro 38 was an awesome show. Great addition and a great way to highlight those guys and just how good that they are off the bottom bulb. So that's going to roll us into Race Pack Thursday, another 30K. And so the final round, Johnny Bracket Racer takes the win. Johnny Ezell over Trevor Larson. And, you know, as we mentioned again, I mean, so now the names just keep on coming in this result section for the Spring Fling Million. So Johnny Bracket Racer making an appearance in the winner's circle over Trevor Larson. Great run for Trevor. And then once again, as we mentioned earlier, John Lewis Jr. hanging around all the way to the semifinal. And Pro 38 was none other than another one of the names that we're going to hear over and over, I'm sure, this season and many seasons to come. None other than Nasty Nick Hayes in the T1000.
So just to fill you in a little bit here on Trevor Larson, he's a more of a super comp, top dragster kind of guy, and he's not the biggest fan of bracket racing. And his wife kind of poked at him on Facebook in the runner-up picture. He said, yeah, you know, sucks we went and did this stupid bracket racing here this weekend, or something along those lines. And, you know, I think we're going to see Trevor Larson and Kendra Larson at a little more bracket races, maybe.
Well, that'd be good. The water's warm, you know, and that's an awesome show for Trevor out there. So, but man, Johnny Bracket Racer again. And this role just doesn't stop. If he shows up, pretty much seems like one of the days is going to belong to him, if not, you know, multiple days. So still shown again, 2019, he's got no signs of slowing down. He's taking the boots to the winner's circle.
Yep. And that rolls us into the day, the Maytag Silver State Refrigeration $1 Million Friday at the K&N Spring Fling Million by Optima Batteries. See that? We do that five times fast and we'll screw it up every time. But doesn't matter. We're here in Peeps Pennington, which happens to be on the phone with us here later today. He got the win over Sugar Shane Carr, former $1 Million race winner, former $100,000 race winner, former world champion, former whatever. Holy cow. You know, you got Peep Show, which has been to, he's been to three cars in the million at Montgomery. He's been to 16 and 8 a couple different times. He's won 10 granders. He's won the Mini Million Points Series. Finally does it. You know, he finally gets it done. But, you know, we're going to kind of talk to Peeps in the interview here in a little bit, but you know, at 16 cars, Underwood said and that's that the ladder showed Peeps and Kenny Underwood, and there was no buy left when Underwood called flyer at Montgomery. At 14 cars, he was sitting on the potential buy, so it makes a lot more sense then. Not that it doesn't make sense now, because it's, you know, there's $465,000 in at 16 cars, and it was $3,000 to go home. That was an eight round race to that point for $3,000. But for Underwood to say no, I'm good right now. We're not going to do that. And you've got people ready to, you know, do a little bit more than race on the racetrack. It upset a lot of people. And as a psychological advantage, if Underwood turns that lamp on against Peeps, he's got seven other guys coming back that are mad at him. At least, you know, at least five of those guys are pretty upset, and he's in their heads. He doesn't care. You know what? He said, no, I'm here to race for $375,000, and that's what I'm going to do. And ultimately, he got $3,000 in return. But on the flip side, he turns that one lamp on at 16 cars, and that changes the whole dynamic of the race.
Yep. As we were saying, I totally agree that from that point, I guarantee he's looking across at that ladder with Peeps on the other side and thinking that if I can get this wind lamp to come on, then I can probably take it all the way. Not that you're not looking across from some outstanding racers, but I mean, if he takes that wind light, and not to say that he wouldn't be challenged, but Underwood, you know, looked like from that point like he would, you know, like he definitely would go. I don't know. I mean, it's so tough to predict. It's totally his right, absolutely, to go ahead and call the flyer. But awesome race to watch. Of course, I was sitting there watching it at, what was it, almost 1 in the morning. 45 minutes to get from 32 cars to get six, to get the sit round to 16 on the track. So,
and they were in the lane 25 minutes before that.
Right. And everybody knew something was.
I kind of talked to Peter, and he said, you know, he said, that's why we do it. This is what we live for as racers. This is what we do. You know, we want to challenge these guys. We want to bring out, you know, the competitor in them, and that's what we saw at the Money Talk at 16. And he said, you saw who stepped up. You saw who stepped up and failed and just made a good lap. And you saw people that it bothered. He said, I'm not calling anybody out, but, you know, that is something that you have to be able to do. And Peeps did that. He said, to see Peeps just kind of nod his head and walk towards his race car, he said, I knew it was game on. It was going to be a good drag race. And it was that. It was every bit of that. And but how about Andy Schmall? Holy cow. At 16, he's got the Pro 38 final. He takes care of his name's escaping me. Forgive me. The Orange S10, that is really, really good off the bottom anytime they're out west. Come back around to eight cars, and you have to run Lane Dickin. Lane won a $100,000 race last year in Georgia. He won a Fling 50 at Gallot, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it was at Gallot. Don't quote me. But Lane Dickin, a guy going 440s in a blower and burns his blower car, and Andy Schmall turns on the wind light in his lane off the bottom, foot braking it, going what I think 580s, I think is what that car was going. And kudos to him, because I can't hit the bottom if, you know, you drew a map, marked it with an X, and he's doing out there doing it for 375,000.
Yep, Andy's always good, great pro racer. Dustin Henry was the guy in the truck.
Yeah, see, look, this is why we do this, because I mess it up and you help me out. That's good. See?
What I want to say thank you to is Kyle Seipel for putting out these awesome press releases from bracketraces.com. Makes our job a ton easier, brother. Thank you. You know, Andy getting down that far, man, at that point, what a story that would have been. But semifinals, definitely nothing to hold your head down about. I mean, the biggest race that we have seen so far in sports. So our pick, just to revisit that from last week, just so I don't know that we really want to, but I'm really sorry that if somehow bad luck carried on to these people, but my picks were Kevin Brannon, Corey Galletti, Scotty Richardson, and Mia Tedesco. Pretty good picks. Your picks were Gary Williams, Brandon Taylor, Stephen McCrory, and Marco Paravalaris. So I think we did a good job of picking. When you read through those names, definitely no bad picks there, but none of our picks made it to round six. So I guess that's why, you know, maybe what we get for not actually wagering something before we made the picks. So I think somehow we put the hex on them. So I'm sorry. We'll have to figure out what we're going to do and be more organized next time and come up with some type of wager.
Well, you need to have a little pep talk with your drivers when you pick them, because I'm not sure if you've been watching what's going on in the Facebook world and the meme world, but there was a round where Corey Galletti ran out of fuel in the water box.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that.
And, man, they're throwing him under the bus. But as Loose Change said, it's hard to roll it when it's out of fuel. So, I mean, maybe his dad's got some kind of plan. maybe there's a remote drain somewhere that he doesn't see. So, no, it's a...
That's the best one I've heard so far.
Yeah, it's fun to give Corey a rough time, because he takes it pretty well. And, you know, for being as young as he is and the success he's had, I think that, you know, as long as he can turn around and take it on the chin like that, because he's going to get that, because what he's done, you know, he's going to get the comments and take, he has to take those and just keep rolling with them. And he does a really good job at that, especially whenever you hang out with like Bug McCarty and people like that on the daily basis. Nathan Martin, you have to be a little thick skin. But on the flip side, you know, we like giving Corey a hard time. And, you know, podcast bump, you know, maybe it was my fault he ran out of fuel.
Yeah. Hey, I can't say anything. I think I left a Mountain Dew in the trunk one time. So, I mean, what are you going to do? It didn't cost me the round, but they were giving me hell about it the whole time when I came back up there, because I got soda all over the starting line. They didn't know what the hell was falling out of my car.
Oh, man. Looks like antifreeze.
Mm-hmm.
Probably tastes like it, too. I don't know. I don't drink that stuff.
Whew. Yeah. So where were we? FTI Saturday, the winner, Vinny Dimino, making the trip from New York, and John Labuse Jr. in the final round. So another final two runner-up spots for John Labuse Jr. and a semi in the 30Ks. And then so the Pro 38 winner, Andy Schmall, over his brother, Brandon Schmall, in the final. So
that makes,
great story
that
there
makes
as well.
Two Fling Million Saturdays back-to-back for Vinny, Zach.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And they said he didn't win a round before. Is that correct? I don't know if he didn't win a round, but he didn't get, I guess.
I don't think he saw third round all weekend until Saturday. Making the trip, I'm not sure if you know this or not, the Domino's own New Media Dragway, where the New Media 150s were last year.
Mm-hmm.
But Big Vin is, he's nasty once he leaves PA, but, you know, he doesn't get to go out that way much. And I know that he tries to make it count and try to wrap your head around that. You win no more than six rounds in 4 days and you got win the race the last day. If that's the case, I got a big one coming sometime.
And the guy, and you're looking over in the other lane, and the dude that you have to race has already been in a runner-up and a semi. And you know that he wants nothing more than to take the last race and make it just, you know, one of the most epic runs that we've seen in a long time. And how about Andy Schmall? Another shout-out there. So two Pro 38 wins for him in a field that is stacked. So very impressive. And then to get the final round win with your brother in the other lane. That's awesome. Great story there. Great event overall, you know. Like I said, love the coverage. They do a great job with everything. I can't stress enough. I'm seriously considering next year as far as like the scheduling my big money races around not Vegas, but the other fling races. I'm not ready for that trek yet. But anyway, awesome event as usual. And I don't know what to say now.
Yep.
An epic failure.
Pete and Kyle did their job. And, you know, you could sit here all day long and talk about, holy cow, they did it again. They did it again. But It's bad when we expect this caliber event from them. You know, we're so complacent with how incredible they've treated us as racers and how incredible their events are. And, you know, you see all the prizes, over $65,000 in prizes and giveaways. Like, what? There's races that don't even pay 65 grand that you don't get nothing if you go out third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round.
Oh, yeah. And the reaction time challenge stuff and all that.
That's
just
intense.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Crap. You know, there were three or four guys a thou away from getting 50 grand.
So then they go ahead and put 20 grand on it for the race, right?
Yeah. And I think Jeremy Maples was 000 and a thou under in a double breakout race winning. He's like 000, get behind 4,000. And the guy in the other lane's 000 and 7,000 under or something like that. 5,000 under. It's like, and you could hear Pete was in the tower and with Jed, and he's like, man, I whipped myself, or man, that was bad right there. And shout out to Matt Datus. Oh man, I love it. Mm-hmm. I love when Pete announces, and I think, you know, Pete's not an idiot, obviously, but I think that keeps it interesting. You know, or you get Big Jed in there and Big Jed keeps it interesting. But, you know, you don't get the run-of-the-mill announcers at the fling that you see, like, you know, when I announce, you know, I just spit out whatever. But Pete keeps him entertained whenever he's got, I don't know, 15 other things that he really needs to be doing. He takes the time to sit down. And, you know, if that doesn't speak leaps and bounds about a promoter, you know, I don't know how you could spend your money anywhere else when a fling's in your town. So anyway, that's enough Spring Fling Million talk, Zach. What else you got for us?
Well, with that, we're going to roll right into our interview. Very happy to say. So we're going to introduce Mr. Peeps Pennington, the million race winner, is joining us.
So with us today is the newest edition of the Winners Club, the Spring Fling Million in Las Vegas. The guy's been knocking on the door. He's been to the semifinals and different millions. He's pretty much owned Las Vegas every time he rolled in the gate out there. But Peeps Pennington, man, how does it feel? Has it sank in yet? 2019 Spring Fling Million winner.
Yeah, man, it's a pretty cool feeling. A lot of people ask me how it's felt. It's really not something you can describe, but it's definitely awesome. Just a special event altogether, and obviously the highest paying race in history. So it is cool. Just something I'm proud to get done.
Yeah, it was like 3:30 in the morning here. I was watching on Bang Shift, and, you know, I'm pretty good at reading people, and you came out of the car, and you kind of just had this look on your face that was just blank. I mean, was that kind of how you were feeling? You kind of just didn't really know how to act or think at that time? Because, I mean, I don't know how I would feel if that thing came on at, you know, the final round of the million. So,
well, it's just, you know, part of you feels really good, and the other part of you feels, you know, just pretty humble. And there's so many guys that are very talented racers, and I race with a lot of them across the country, and, you know, they've won everything but that race. So for me to be able to do it at, you know, a pretty young age is cool, but also at the same time, you know, it makes you feel privileged, I guess you could say.
So for the listeners and those of us that may not know, how old are you, peeps?
28, turned 28 in February this year.
So tell us, you know, for I know everybody listening to this podcast have obviously heard of Peeps Pennington, especially now, but had been before for sure, you know, perennial big buck race winner and always there in the late rounds. If you can, just kind of tell us about yourself and how you've got to this point in racing. Just a little history on Peeps Pennington.
Well, we grew up in a town called Three Rivers, Texas, which is where my mom and dad still live today, and our shop is where we keep the cars and stuff. It's a town of about 2,000 people. Actually, the population sign still says 1,800 and something. So it's a small town. You know, my dad didn't race quite like we do growing up. He was more of the local Saturday night, you know, take us to the track. And, you know, my brothers got into it, obviously, in high school. We never had junior dragsters or anything like that. But, you know, Mike bought a 78 Camaro when he was 16 years old, and it was basically a street car, and he ran foot brake with it. You know, one thing led to the next. Then we bought a dragster, and, you know, as time went on, just more and more stuff. I started out in a roadster, actually. Made my first run at a track almost in Mexico, just north of the border in Edinburgh, Texas. That was pretty cool to start out in a roadster, and then 15 years later, or whatever it was, almost 15 years later, to win a race like this in a car that my dad built. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool deal.
So, Peeps, it's pretty well known y'all rolling to the racetrack. I'm not sure how it happens, but you roll four or five cars out of a stacker trailer.
what kind of
circus operation we got going on here? How do you fit your race cars in the trailer? And golf cart and mopeds, whatever else you bring.
Yeah, that's we special ordered that thing from Gold Rush, and we put the two roadsters on the top, and one of them actually the front wheels sit in the loft. And it's quite the contraption, you know, to load. A lot of people watch us load them up there, but once you've done it, you know, a couple thousand times like we have, we can get them all four loaded probably faster than most people can get their golf cart and a door car in the trailer. So
take us through a little bit about Friday. First off, I mean, how did your race go up to that point? And then how did you mentally prepare for the $1 million race? Was it any different than normal? Was it just another race? I mean, just kind of talk to us about leading up to it.
Tuesday, I guess it was, or the first 30 grander was Wednesday, I guess. So Wednesday, we were driving both roadsters. I was entered in both cars, and I actually lost with 10 cars left in Mike's roadster, which is the one that didn't do well in the million. So I had a lot of data in that car. So on the day of the million, I was debating on doubling, and I thought, man, I just, you know, it's a lot of money, obviously. Everybody knows that, to enter the race. And so I was debating on whether to double them or just drive the other car. I said, you know what, I'm just going to double, because you just never know what happens. Somebody might lay me one down early, and if I got another shot, that would be wonderful. So I doubled both cars, and it's crazy, because the one I had the runs in and I felt more comfortable in up to that point broke a converter and lost about 300s in the 60 in second round. And so that it was just luckily I double entered and was able to get in the other car, and it was flawless. So, you know, just got lucky, I guess, on that aspect.
Let's kind of dive deeper into Friday a little bit. I kind of want to know a little bit more intuitively about the talk at 16 cars. It's very well known that Underwood said no deal, and there were quite a few, if not one, really upset racer. What did you have to do to bring yourself, you know, hey, I just need to go out here and do my job? Because if I remember correctly, a couple years ago at the million in Montgomery, there was a situation similar to that where you were upset. What did you have to tell yourself to say, hey, you know, just a guy in the other lane, go out there and lay one down and come back?
We expected it, because I knew at the trailer before we ever drove to the lanes for the round of 16, I knew that Underwood was still in, and I figured, you know what, he's probably not going to do anything right here. So when I got to the lanes and everybody was talking about it, it wasn't really a surprise. And obviously they had already announced the pairs, and I knew I had him. You know, at that point in the game, you just you got to take it for what it's worth, and you got to understand from both sides. I get what he was doing. I understand it. Just make the best run you can, and take the situation into your hands and try to do what's best for everybody.
$465,000 at 16 cars, and $3,000 to lose. I mean, I'm sure you weren't thinking about that a whole lot then, but you know how wild that sounds right now.
No, I know the numbers are big. I was looking at them, writing them down, and they're big numbers. But at the same time, you got to understand, I tried to just tell myself what the race is going to look like. This is what he's going to be dialed. This is what I should expect. And that kind of helped take my mind off the money, to be honest.
So 2017, as we all know, your brother Michael Pennington took the runner-up spot to Luke Ogaki. Mm-hmm. So did you think right then and then after you saw that you had to do better than your brother?
Well, you know, it is cool to win it before he did. I remember vividly when he pulled around the corner to run the final. You know, it's just, there's nothing like it. And I was on the scooter that night, and they were taking pictures, and you know, it felt like it took them 15 minutes to pull from under the tower to the water box. And I thought, man, this is, if I could trade places with him, I would give $25,000 right now just to trade him spots for him to be on my scooter and I could get in that car, because there's no way Bogak could beat me right now. And that's kind of what I felt when I pulled under the tower. I said, you know what? This is my shot right here. I'm here just 2 years later. And, you know, at that point, you just try to take advantage of the situation and give it all you got for one last run.
And rolling around the corner, you didn't have somebody that was at that stage for the first time ever in the other lane. You had a former $1 million race winner, a guy that has won $100,000 race. He's won, I mean, in recent years, you know, he's won freaking world championships since Christ was a kid. And, yep, and here he is in the other lane for a $30,000 win light.
Yep.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, it was definitely not going to be an easy final. And I knew that. I've raced Sugar Shane, I don't know how many times, you know, raced all across the country with him. And kind of the same thing applies, though. I ran the race through my mind before I got on the track probably 25 times. You know, what is it going to look like? You know, he's got a blower car. They pull hard on the top. You know, just run all these things through your mind before you get in the moment that way. You know, it's almost second nature when you get to the point where you have to make your decisions. You feel like you've already done it. And, you know, just do everything you can to take the pressure off yourself, because obviously there is no way to avoid the adrenaline you feel at that point. I mean, it just, the stakes are high. Everybody's watching, you know, however many people watching online. Of course, you don't think of any, you don't think of
that. 4 o'clock in the morning. 4 o'clock in the morning, not many on this side of the world.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I tell you right now, 1 o'clock, I was done. When it got to be 1 o'clock here, I was like, man, I'm too old. I've got to, I will try not to pay any attention in the morning and not look at my phone. And that's what I did. I just got up and watched it from where I had left off. I'm too old.
Yeah. Well, my brother's, Phil, he was a little nervous. He's just always that way, you know, triple check everything. And Mike, he acted like we were running for $1,500 and, it was no big deal. And I'm like, you know, you got to find a fine line between there. You know, obviously everybody wants to win, and you just got to find the middle of the road and try to elevate yourself to make it happen.
Did you have any point throughout the night where you had to just stop and you know, maybe go be by yourself for a minute, or pull yourself together just for a minute, just to get back in the race car? Or were you pretty well head down, putting in work? Here we go.
You know, there's so many people at the trailer between runs. When you get down to where there's 16 or less, there's a lot of people come by the trailer and talk and want to talk and stuff like that. And so just right there, I don't like to talk a whole lot about the money and all that stuff at the trailer. It just, so I would get away from everybody and, you know, just mind my own business for a while. And then when they called, just come back to the lanes.
Something that you said there, peeps, I thought was interesting. You talked about elevating yourself to the moment. I mean, I've heard, over being a kind of an obsessive sports fan myself for years and years, and you think about great athletes over time, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, you know, that type of mentality of, here is the big game,
right,
the big match, the big race, the big final, whatever that is, and they're able to pull somewhere from within and get and get more than that. So I think, I don't know, I really more of a comment than a question. I just think it's interesting that you use that wording, because I've heard it so many times before from people that have been hyper successful, I guess, if you will, in whatever their discipline or sport. So very cool stuff, man. Tell us about afterwards. I mean, how was the Cosmopolitan, the limo ride? I mean, I guess it was probably even pretty late Vegas time by the time you got out there. But I mean, how was it?
Yeah, well, we all went and took a shower in the motorhome, which I've already told somebody already called and interviewed me once, and he died laughing when I told him that. He said, you had a room at the Cosmo with a hot tub and a big walk-in shower, and you took a shower in the motorhome. I said, well, just didn't want to ride in the limo down there all sweaty. But yeah, it's definitely different for a hillbilly like me to go to a suite like that in Vegas. We were 63 floors off the ground. I didn't know elevators went that high. We don't have we don't have no skyscrapers in San Antonio. So that was a different deal for me. It was cool though. You know, we walk out on the balcony and me and Mike and Phil, Cassie, Ashley, which is my girlfriend, Angelica, which is Phil's girlfriend, Hunter Patton, my best buddy from high school, Austin Tadlock, which was there racing as well, and his girlfriend went all in the limo. So it was a pretty good time. Stayed out probably a little too late, and I actually had planned on racing the following day, and that didn't happen. So
who you named everybody there in the hotel? Who is the best driver in the family?
Oh, it's me without a doubt. The other guys, they know it. They don't have a chance.
Cassie. Wow. I like it.
Well, Cassie's beat me, but, that was a long, long time ago. I've raced Mike in the final several times, and he's just, this day and age, he'd rather just split and not race because he don't want the embarrassment that comes with it.
Woo!
Spoken like a true brother.
So next time we see you at the racetrack, there's gonna be one really big rig rolling in, and your roadster on a truck, on a flatbed trailer, and your truck pulling it, right?
Possibly.
So kind of keeping in the same family conversation. Obviously, you're driving one of the most sought after bracket cars ever built. I mean, it's no secret that there's not a price tag on any of these cars. What inspired your dad to say, hey, let's go ahead and put a few roadsters together? By the way, we're going to make them go like 460, 480. And I know they went, what, 520, 530 when they were first built?
But yeah, they probably made 700 horsepower in the 90s, but, that was all you could do then.
Why?
I have no idea. That's a good question. He was in the oil and gas industry in the early, since he got out of high school or college, and for some reason in 94 he decided he was going to build race cars, and he said, well, if I'm going to build one, I'm going to build 10 because I can buy the material and all the stuff. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to build 10, I'm going to sell some and try to make a little money. And obviously it didn't work as far as making money goes. He went back
make my kids money.
He went back to the oil and gas business, and that's still what he does today. But I'm glad he did it. He actually built 10 of them and sold 9. We've bought back, I think we have 5 of them now, actually. So the other ones are in the shop. They're not ready to race, but they're, the chassis is there. Just a little blood, sweat, and tears, and we can have them running. Just cost a little money.
And on that same topic, obviously Thomas Dunford had one of your dad's cars. Can you kind of, what was your relationship with him? And, kind of give us a little background of Dunford and how he came to purchase one of these. And I think you guys were pretty good friends over the whole deal, right?
Yeah, actually him and my dad were really good friends. They talked probably once or twice a month at least, and he was a great guy and just a fun guy to be around and talk to. And when he passed away, his family contacted us and said they wanted the car to go home, and so that's how we got it back. But the car that he had is still in the shop. We haven't really done a whole lot with it, but everything is still there, and it's in our shop. So don't really know what the plans are for it, but if we ever decide to bring it out, we've got it.
Kind of switching subjects a little bit, as far as current drivers go, well, I guess, or even past drivers, could be from any era. What drivers in our sport do you most look up to and why?
Man, that's a good question. I know everybody's
You can take your time.
Everybody's got their picks on who's the best, and, you know, the talk is, it's you see it pop up on Facebook every now and then. I don't even read it because it's so jibber-jabber. There's just a handful of guys that you watch that just seem to figure out a way to turn on wind lights, and those guys are, I think Jed Coughlin is probably arguably one of the best there is. I mean, he's got other responsibilities now. If he wasn't, I don't want to say forced to go run pro stock, but if he would dedicate some time and come bracket racing, you would see him win a lot. He would be fairly dominant, and he's very good. He's smart, has good equipment, and he's good under pressure. I mean, he's one of the best there is, without a doubt. And I've raced him in Vegas in the final, which was probably, up until this point, one of the coolest races I've ever won, just because, you know, it's racing Jed Coughlin Jr. in the final in Vegas under the lights, big racetrack, just a cool deal. And so he's one of the guys I would say I look up to, just because he can keep it all together. Peter Biondo, really good also, same level. Gary Williams, for some reason, has a knack for winning. He can get it done. Raced with him for a couple years. Fun guy to hang out with. Pretty talented racer, you know. For some reason, it's not that they do anything spectacular or different. Just seem like they make the right decisions and do the right thing more than other people. But I could go on with the list. How long you want me to make it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good trio. And I have one Jed Coughlin story to share that I thought of while you're talking. The only time I ever talked to him in my life, we were in the lanes in Bowling Green for one of the 10 tuck races, and they started taking punch cards up, and I'd already used all my punches. And so I was in like lane 2 in the round track, and I need to get through 2 lanes, and he just happened to be beside me, and I said, man, if you don't mind, you know, if you just stay there for a second, I'm going to get out of line because I don't have a punch left. And he looked at me and he said, just make something up. So they'll let you through. Don't worry about it. Just go up there and just tell them. Just come up with a story how you lost it or something. I was like, no, I don't want to be like that. I already used my punch. I'm going to go ahead and pull out. But yeah, that's my Jed Coughlin story.
And then, of course, one more guy. You got Johnny Ezo, which is my generation, very close to my age. I raced with him. I know he's from Louisiana, but he races in Texas or right around our region. And, you know, he's got a different approach to what he does, and it's obviously works, as everybody can see, but he finds a way to get it done. So he's one of the guys I would say is, I don't know about looking up to him because he's my age, but you get what I'm saying.
So on the Michael and Philip aspect, you said, you know, Philip was doing backflips and Michael was just over there having Michelob Ultra. What were they telling you in between rounds? You know, obviously just keep digging, but, you know, did they offer anything or say anything that kind of just made you think, you know, I'm racing myself here. We're going down the racetrack and we're going to lay down, you know, less than 10 total or better. So what were they bouncing off of you just to get you to realize that, hey, it's just a race. We're just going to do this.
They just kept telling me, you know, this is the race that this is the one we live for. And,
you had no pressure, bud,
close.
But this is, yeah.
You're close. Just keep doing what you're doing. Stay with it. Stick with it. You're not far now. So nothing really, like, you know, advice wise, I would say just don't do nothing stupid.
don't roll 5 out.
Yeah, Phil kept telling me, add a thou, put one more in there. I'm like, man, I'm good. I hadn't been very great all day.
So going off kind of, we've asked this question to several of our guests. I like to get everybody's opinion on this because it's a topic that I think needs to discussed by racers in this kind of format. What is your opinion on the current state of bracket racing?
That's a good question. You know, here locally where we live, it's in bad shape. But, you know, when we go to, like, the event we just went to, 586 cars or whatever it was.
All of them.
It looks healthy. So I guess it's just regional, you know. I mean, certain events do very, very well. You know, I hope it stays good because we got a lot invested in it, and we spend most of our, well, all of our free time. This is what we do. You know, we don't go on vacation. This is what we do for fun, and it seems like it's more work than our job most of the time. So, you know, I think it's fine, though. I think more people are going to the bigger races and realizing that they actually, you know, they can compete because, you know, 586 cars, there's people there from Mexico. There's people from New Jersey, Michigan, Oregon. I mean, there are people from all over the country, you know, taking a shot at it. So that tells me that I think we're good shape. I think we're doing good.
So we're going to, you know, we've asked you, you know, pretty intense questions about the million and whatnot. We're going to kick it back and go a little lighter side here. First question, do you miss your dragster yet?
Well,
because I think the first thing you said was, this is why I got rid of my dragster. This is it.
Well, I'm one of those guys that's, I don't want to say superstitious, but I just think some cars get along with you better than other ones. And I even told Mike this on the way home. I said, I don't know why, but I just win in Phil's Roadster. It just, I don't know. It just, the wind light comes on. And I raced better in his car, but the wind lights didn't come on. I can get a few of them to come on in a row, but I have yet to win something that's meaningful in his car. So I have that phobia that, you know, if it's a good car, it'll find a way to win. And if it's not, you just need to throw it away and get another one. So for some reason, my last dragster, the car was great. I mean, it printed time slips, and I just couldn't seem to stack 9 of them in a row as much as I wanted. So I got rid of it, and I just started driving Phil's Roadster mainly all of last year, basically. And, you know, did well. Won a couple 10 granders and went a lot of laps. And so that was the reason for that. But I've got a new dragster on the way. I don't know if anybody knew that, but we got home Monday night. And I haven't started working on it, but we just got to wire it and plumb it, put a motor and tranny in it, and it'll be ready. So that should be coming soon, probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I would say.
So what you're saying is you're going to get Phil the dragster and say, hey, I'm going to borrow this roadster for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I did have it built with a little big cage on it. You know, like it's got a 24-inch cage and a 1-inch extra height. That way he can squeeze in there, because I don't think I'm going to give up the roadster quite yet.
So do you get lucky, or do you make your own luck?
I knew somebody would ask that. I think you make your own luck. You know, I really do. If you look at the guys that win a lot, they don't get lucky a lot. There's nobody that's that lucky. Did I have a lucky round? Yes. As far as getting lucky to win a $1 million race, I don't know about that. I mean, I don't think anybody can say I won the $1 million. I was just the luckiest guy in the world, because it's just not easy to win that many rounds in a row on pure luck. You know, you got to play the cards you're dealt every single round. And, you know, the guy that, you don't have to beat everybody. You got to beat the guy that's next to you. So that's one way I look at it. And, you know, playing smart is part of the game.
if you could draw some blueprints on how to make luck, I'm in dire need. So just let me know when you get that done.
I don't know, bud. Couldn't tell you.
So you rolled back around the corner and you go to talk money at 8 cars. Out of 7 other drivers, how many of them high-fived you? Because if you lost that round, they're still not getting paid.
Right. Yeah, when I got back to the trailer from the 16-car round from racing Underwood, I told Mike and Phil, I said, when I go back to the starting line here in a second, everybody up there is going to be tickled pink.
You should have walked up there and said, Matt, y'all owe me a, you know, 10% now. Move on out.
I know Underwood's gonna hear this video, and I know that I don't want him to take it the wrong way, because I fully understand what he was doing, and I have no disrespect for Kenny Underwood. He's a great guy, never done nothing wrong to me. I know a lot of people are mad at him, upset with him, whatever. It is what it is, and he definitely made it interesting, that was for sure.
I mean, for everybody that was mad at him, all they had to do was turn the next lamp on. Yeah, he didn't make them lose that next round.
Yeah, they had a 50-50 shot anyway.
I don't know. I mean, I think I 100% agree. It's your right to run for the flyer no matter what. Yeah, completely understand, especially with the big races that he's been having lately and the big wins. I mean, why not roll the dice again and see if you can score big? So, yeah, much respect to Underwood for doing what he did. You know, in that situation, there's no blame to go around there, I don't think. That's my opinion on it. It's every man's right to run the way that it's printed.
No, I feel like he was probably just trying to add a little pressure to the race that there's already a lot of pressure involved with. And so had he made it through that round, I think, you know, it probably could have benefited him well had he won the round with 16 cars, because the other, you know, guys were flustered. I mean, not flustered, but a lot of them were angry. And when you get to that point, well, I can't race when I'm like mad. So I would assume other people have trouble doing what they set out to do while they're mad. So, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It could have played well for him, but
If he had anybody other than Peeps Pennington, it probably would have worked out all right.
Well, it's not that I made a stellar run, but well, I did.
It's no secret you're more of a level-headed person. You know, Michael and Philip get worked up every now and then, but you know, I've seen a lot of times where everybody around you is worked up, and you're just like, hey, I'm just here to hop in this roadster here and go down the racetrack.
Well, you got to do what gives you the best chance to win, and getting worked up doesn't do that. So, and that round, if I told you that there was no added pressure, I would have lied, because you know, I mean, there's, I don't know how many people were on the starting line. I heard it was a bunch. I don't know how many people were watching, but you know, it's a lot. And everybody there wanting me to beat Kenny Underwood. And I didn't want to beat him because I didn't like him. I wanted to beat him because I wanted to win the million. You know, it's like all these people are rooting for me to win. And on one hand, you're like, you know, if I lose right here, I let everybody here down, because he's not going to split with him at eight either. That's what I'm thinking. And so if he does beat me, everybody's going to hate my guts. You know, at that point, it does add a little pressure. I mean, it's a no-split million-dollar 16-car round. That's
$465,000 in the purse. And a $3,000 nine-round race you've ran to that point if you lose.
Right. Yeah, it's, you can't not think about that is what I'm telling you.
Go back to just a little bit more serious side just for a second, because I was going to ask this earlier, but we got busy. Kind of give us a run about Pennington Motor Cars and what you and your brothers do and day in and day out. Because I called you today, and it sounded like you were sitting at a computer desk and weren't working too hard. So kind of let us know what's going on.
Well, I was, I've had a couple laid-back days since we got home. Just trying to get back in the groove here. So I wasn't doing a whole lot today when you called me. I was actually at home, but just for a split second I had to come pick up a car at my brother's house and take it back to the car lot. So we decided that we would open up a used car dealership in July of 2015. And it's kind of a long story, but when I got out of college in 2013, I told my mom and dad I'm gonna go racing for money. I'm gonna do this. I'm going to give it a shot. And Mike and Phil had a job working in the oil field, and obviously did well. And I hated it. I didn't like what they do. I didn't like what they used to do. I don't like what my dad does. It just isn't fun to me. So I told him, I said, I'm going to go racing. And if I go broke, I'll go to work. I went racing. I raced all of 2014. Had a good year. Didn't go broke. Raced all of 2015, or all the way up until we started the car lot. I don't know. Y'all probably don't follow the price of oil at all, but that's what drives the economy in South Texas. It's just everybody does that here. If you live here, chances are you work in the oil business. And so in 2015, the oil business crashed. The price of oil went really low, and you know, everybody kind of lost their jobs. And we decided, you know what? I told them, I said, whenever y'all get ready to go to work, we'll go to work and we'll start our own company or whatever. So they lost their jobs, and we said, well, what do you want to do? We sat around many a night thinking, what are we going to do? What do y'all want to do? And we said, well, we could sell used race cars. You know, that's what we've done. We bought and sell, you know, race cars, trailers, motors, just stuff. And if we can do that, we can sell daily drivers. So we said, well, let's figure out how to open a used car dealership. So that's what we did. We sit around now and we laugh and wonder how we didn't go broke, because we had literally had no idea what we were doing. What are we? 2019 now, and we're doing better than we ever would have thought we'd have done. And it's just, you know, it's pretty cool, really. And so on a day-to-day basis, I buy cars. That's what I do. I go to auctions. I go to silent bid sales and bid on cars. And Phil is my salesman. And
that's,
Mike,
that's accurate. That's pretty accurate right there.
He's a
people Michael
person.
Works on him, don't he?
And Mike works on him. He can fix anything that breaks, which is good. And, you know, it's working out for us, and it's just amazing to me how far we've come in just a short amount of time. It feels like it's been forever, because we really don't pay ourselves nothing. So it's really good to win a race like this, because it helps out quite a bit.
So one last question, and we're going to end this on a high note, and we're going back to the lighter side one more time. Embarrass your least favorite brother and give us a story about him. I'll take all the blame tomorrow whenever they listen to this. I'll take all the blame. It's my fault. You know, it might not be your least favorite, but we need to hear a good story, because y'all have a good time. There's got to be times where you're just like, how does this even happen?
Man, you know, Mike and Phil, they're 2 years apart, and I'm 5 years younger. So they grew up kind of more together than I did, and they fight like cats and dogs. I mean, they just every now and then they just don't get along. They're kind of different, if you know them. Mike likes to work on stuff. Phil don't necessarily like to work on stuff. And so every time we're getting ready to go racing in the shop, you know, Phil says that's good enough. You know, it's ready. The stuff's ready. It's all good. Put it in a trailer and let's go. And Mike's the kind of guy that likes to, like, you know, set the air in the tires at the shop, you know, get them on 6 pounds. That way when we get there, all we got to do is unload, warm them up, and we're ready to roll. And it's probably been 7 years now, but we were in the shop one night getting ready to go racing, and they get to fighting like normal, you know, over something stupid being what they are. And next thing I know, there's stuff flying across the shop. Of course, I'm 140 pounds soaking wet. There ain't a whole lot I can do but just watch. Tell them how stupid they are. Phil throws a hammer, you know, about 20 foot across the shop. Next thing you know, Mike breaks a broomstick over his head. He breaks a broomstick over his head. They're literally outside on the ground rolling around and just acting like idiots. And so I went out there and tell them how stupid they are. But, you know, I really don't have a story other than, you know, that I could tell you on here other than stuff like that. You know, they're idiots, both of them. They're great guys. I wouldn't trade them for nothing. But every now and then I gotta get on them and keep them in a straight line. They get a little carried away.
So that actually I was going to ask you earlier, but I didn't want to offend you, but I know you're not easily offended. Exactly how much heavier was the Spring Fling Million Trophy than you were? Because they wanted you to hold that thing over your head and you're like shoulder height, the size is going.
Well, for one thing, I was wore out. I don't know how long we raced, but it seems like they get up at 5 a.m. in Vegas to start. You know, there's people doing burnouts at like 7:20 a.m. I think it feels like. And so first of all, it feels like you get up super early over there for some reason, and we raced until what was it, I don't know what time we run the final,
it was like 12:45 Las Vegas time. Yeah,
so we raced for 24 minus 7 hours.
Texas math, that's like 13, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a long time to race. And I was pretty give out, to be honest with you. And but the trophy probably honestly weighs 40 pounds, I think. I haven't weighed it, but it's pretty heavy. Big. That thing is. That's a stout trophy.
And my last question, I tacked a couple on here. You guys play musical chairs with your race cars all the time. Have you ever gotten the wrong car and drove it to the lanes?
No, but I've gotten in the wrong car and drove it for the day. I know that. We try not to change that much, to be honest. We try to know what's going to happen before the weekend starts, who's going to drive what. And I think we're going to Dallas this weekend for Cody's race, and I haven't decided what I'm going to race yet, but I need to figure that out. So
whichever car is better when the sun goes down,
that's what I tell them. I always tell them, y'all just tell me what you don't want to drive, I'll drive that.
Oh, and one last thing also, this is your time. Anybody out there you want to shout out to, you want to thank, have at it.
Well, we got to thank a couple people. Mickey Thompson Tires, they've helped us out for, well, a long time. I mean, we've been running Mickey Thompson Tires for 15 years at least. VP Racing Fuels, their headquarters is right here in San Antonio or Elmendorf, Texas, right down the road from where we live. Huntsville Engine, Andy, I talked to him probably I've talked to him once today, once yesterday. He called me. He was super excited. You know, there's a lot of guys. My parents, my dad. He's the guy that makes us go. He's always challenging us. I'm actually surprised that he told me good job for winning the million, because he's the guy that, you know, you can't please. You can't do anything that impresses him. That's for sure. So he expects the best, but that's good. You know, it keeps us going.
Give us your final overall Las Vegas Spring Fling Million experience. Try to sum it up. They obviously they go above and beyond for everybody, but kind of just try to put it into words, you know, what that track and what that event means to you, because you seem to just show up and just turn on lamps.
Yeah, Las Vegas is in my opinion, one of the coolest racetracks in the country. And there's a few places that I haven't raced yet that I'm excited about going to that I think are very similar. But Vegas is cool to me. Just the the atmosphere is awesome. It's big. It's well lit at night. It's almost like it's daytime when you're staging at night. You can see everything. And if you can't get excited to race at Las Vegas, you know, you just can't get excited to race. And that event in general, and especially on Million Dollar Friday, is, you know, the electricity in the air is like no other. I mean, it's just like any, you know, the Million in Montgomery as well. I mean, it just, it's something about the Million Dollar Race that it kind of raises a hair up on your neck, you know. Just everybody wants to win that race, and so it makes it special. The money's great, obviously, but just the prestige of winning the race is cool, and doing it at an event like Las Vegas is that much better, just because, you know, the attractions there, and, you know, the limo ride to the town, you know, to the Cosmo or whatever, that all makes it that much better.
Well, peeps, it's been great having you on, buddy. You're the only guy I know that needs to wear his racing helmet through the shop. Watch out for flying hammers. Congratulations once again, you know, 2019 Spring Fling Million winner. And I don't think you're done yet this year. You know, you've got some 310s coming up this weekend that should be pretty successful for you, and maybe Michael, maybe Philip, we'll see. But we're looking forward to keeping track of you, and we appreciate you coming on. And I know it was fairly last minute, but man, awesome job. And, you know, I said on Facebook round three that, man, you're due, because, you know, I put on a little Calcutta and everybody's trying, I want peeps, and they weren't wrong.
Yeah.
So congratulations. Thanks for coming on, and we'll see you. We'll see you around. We'll see you soon.
Well, it was good talking. I don't know if I did a good job or not, but I did all I can do. Us hillbillies down here, we don't do a whole lot of interviews. So, you know, this week is going to be pretty wild for me. I'm not really really used to this. I feel like John Force. I've already had two or three of you guys call me.
Wow, we're you guys now. Do you hear that, Zach?
Wow, that's great. Should to be a part of that, you guys. Thanks a lot, peeps. Awesome job. Great talking to you, man, and wish you nothing but the best. Good luck the rest of this season and throughout. So thank you so much for joining us.
All right, guys. Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right. So tonight, our topic for the InMotion Solutions final round, which just want to give a shout out real quick to InMotion Solutions, Jeff Serra, bringing you the final round discussion. For all your decal needs, you need number sets, you need driver name sets, you want crew name sets, some, you know, whatever you want decal wise, he's your man. Get a hold of InMotion Solutions, and he will take the time to make sure you're a satisfied customer. So with that, the final round discussion, I want to talk about, what is your opinion? We could just, you know, chat about what is your opinion on the buy run rule, because I think it's something that maybe bracket racing is lacking, is kind of consistent rules from event to event, whether it be buybacks or buy run. But maybe that's more of what makes it interesting, is that from one race to another, the rule does change a little bit, or from one race to another, I might have only door cars in the other lane, or I might have door cars and dragsters in the other lane, or whatever. But certainly a lot of discussion about this lately on Facebook. So thought we would just kind of talk back and forth. In my personal opinion, I agree with the rule of doing with the best light, and then making the best package the tiebreaker. And then I think the buy should carry. I think if somebody gets the buy and they win, you give them lane choice also. And if they win, then they get to carry the buy until they get it. Or then they just get the benefit, I guess, of getting lane choice throughout. So what's your opinion?
Well, I'm kind of probably going to put a lot of people to bed with this. But where I came from, my dirt racing background, there was a big dispute about rules packages for different classes of cars. And, you know, it drove these racetracks apart and ultimately hurt all of them. Because they all couldn't come together with a unified rule for, hey, this car needs this in it. And I see a lot of resemblances in this day and age of bracket racing. Like, you gotta, once you get to the racetrack, you gotta think, all right, now what's the deal here? How are we gonna do this? And there's not gonna be a widespread rule, bam, here it is, because it's not the case.
Right.
But I think all these big money race promoters need to get together and say, hey, let's make this simple on everybody. Let's do, yeah, reaction time with packages, kicker or whatever, and just all agree on it, because it you know what you're getting when you roll in the gate. Yes, most of it's printed on the flyer. Sometimes it's not, and you're that worried about it, go ask the promoter. I'm sure they'll be happy to tell you before there's a problem instead of after there's a problem. Be proactive, not reactive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that big of a deal. It's a buy run. I mean, yes, it's a big deal. Don't get me wrong. I don't know. I don't ever get them. So if you are that worried about the buy run, please go check it out. Please ask the when you first roll in the gate, go find the promoter and say, what's your rule in the buy run?
Yep.
And
I've done that several times when I've been in a different track and I didn't know, what are they doing? You're drawing cards. What do the cards mean? What's going on? What is going on? You know, and in nicer words, I guess, maybe not that, maybe in those exact words, I believe one time, basically how does this work and how do you pick your buy and how do you determine lane choice? All questions that are perfectly reasonable to ask a track official that should be able to tell you, and whether they know or not know should be able to get the answer from someone that does know the rules. But like I said, I think it somewhat keeps it interesting. I think as long as for the event it's kept consistent and that it's done, you know, the way that it's said it's going to be done the right way. Like, you know, there's no missed, you know, somebody that had a better light doesn't get missed or anything like that. Then I have no problem with it. But I would like, just like you said, that should be, I like reaction time closest to the dial-in. There's some argument there that whoever has the better reaction times may not have the better closer to the dial because they had the advantage. What if their opponent was bad on the tree? So now you're punishing that car for actually winning easier, you know? So I don't know, you know, whether, and then, you know, the car that survived the closest race, there's some argument there. Maybe, you know, both racers are close on the tree, close on the dial. So maybe that guy that won the closest race deserves the buy. I kind of like to think of it like that, in my personal opinion. But anyway, I think it's good things to be discussed. I saw some more discussion about True Start also this week. So I'd like to see opinions on that. And it kind of seemed consistent to me that if the faster you go, the more that you don't like True Start. So, and that's cool. I get it. I totally get it. I thought it was interesting to read opinions. I actually thought it was really healthy discussion. I didn't see any bashing or name calling or anything like that. Just opinion giving. So, on that post in particular about True Start. So I thought that was good to see. So yeah, I guess that kind of wraps it up, Jake, unless you got anything else.
No, and I think the True Start post was, I think Keystone implemented on their weekly bracket series. So you're starting to see it more and more. I think Norwalk's got it now. I don't know if Bristol uses it on a weekly basis, but they used it quite often and they use it in all categories, which whatever, cool. But it's kind of cool to see these door cars that, like, at the Vegas Fling get 330 feet out and then their lamp turns red as they're already turning around and looking, and, you know, you can see in the car that they're still driving, trying to drive the finish line. And then they see their lamp come on, or the other side scoreboard come on, and they're like, oh, well, I could have saved, you know, I don't know, 30 calories by trying to turn my big butt around in the seat to look for this drag.
Right.
Yeah. And if you don't like it, don't go race it. Nobody's forcing you to go. Nobody wants to hear you whine about it, because ultimately it's not going to change anything. It's the rule. That's what that track's going with. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. Plain and simple, that's it. That's all it takes. Go somewhere else. But give it a shot. Don't knock it till you dock it. You know, go
try it.
I
like the live feed with it. I think it makes it more interesting to watch. And I mean, in my personal opinion, we've talked about this before, but why not? I mean, it's supposed to be bracket racing. It's not supposed to be about how fast your car is. It's supposed to be about cutting a light and running your dial-in. So I love the idea, and I hope it keeps spreading and more tracks adopt it. So anyway, there, I'll hop up off of my soapbox now, and I'm going to say thank you very much for everybody supported Dialed In. I mean, we look at the numbers. I think, Jake, when we were looking at them last week, we're kind of like, you know, almost in disbelief how many people are listening. So we really appreciate you. And we have stickers for sale. Get a hold of Jake or me. I've got them right now, ready to ship to you. If you pay me the money on PayPal, I'll put it in the mail the next day. So just let me know, and I will get you hooked up. I'll be in Montgomery this weekend. Anybody that's going to be at Super Sevens that wants a set, I'll have them down there. Like and share. Tell your racing buddies that you like listening to us shoot the breeze on Dialed In and talk to people, and we enjoy doing it. And so thank you all very much. And really appreciate it.
After last week's episode was, you know, Zach said it was a whole bunch of new listeners and downloads and whatnot. So if you're listening to this one in Braille this week, we're sorry. We know we're bad, but, you know, we're faking it till we make it here. Listening to it in Braille blind. Yeah. Anyway, happy to have a good weekend here, and wherever you're going this week, have fun, turn on some wind lights, and we will see you in the staging lanes. If you're in Montgomery, you'll see Zach, and I think I'm going to make an appearance Sunday in Darlington to pit crew. I'm not gonna hang out and try to hit the bottom with those guys. It's like a goldfish in a shark pond. So episode 31, share it. We will see you guys in the staging lanes, and have fun. Go win, and don't suck. Don't break anything. We will see you in about a week.